For 36 years, the Goldman Environmental Prize has celebrated everyday heroes who are showing us that every action has the power to turn apathy into positive change for the environment. Heroes like Bastiana Gurri and Olsi Nika, who helped create Europe's first Wild River National Park. Visit us at goldmanprize.org to discover the stories of this year's Goldman Environmental Prize winners. And learn how when it comes to protecting our planet, the doing makes the difference.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Signature Select Classic Ham, shank half or whole, bone in while supplies last, just 89 cents per pound. Enjoy 1 pound strawberries or 6 ounce blueberries, raspberries, or blackberries. Buy two, get two free of equal or lesser value when you buy four. And mix and match Nabisco snack crackers, Ritz crackers, Cheetos, Doritos, Tostitos, or Sun Chips, selected varieties and sizes. Buy two, get two for free when you buy four. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
All right, here we go on a Monday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Get the video stream up and running and momentarily. We'll be up on Facebook, Twitch, YouTube, X, you name it. You can check out the show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of the shows here on 96.5 The Fan. Hope everybody had a great holiday weekend as well. And we got draft week. We are in it. We are in it Thursday. Going to be up at the Landing in Liberty. Bink and Chris and Osero broadcasting live from that. They've got a draft special tonight. We're going to talk plenty of draft throughout the show today and, of course, throughout the week as well. And later on today, I think some members of the Chiefs may be expected to talk. That'll be later this afternoon. It was going to occur this morning during our show, but schedules moved around. So that will be something to keep an eye on during the drive this afternoon.
Looking forward to it. Did you have a nice, I mean, it wasn't even a long weekend.
Yeah,
just
a normal weekend.
Just a regular weekend, right? My kid played soccer. I feel like that was the only thing we did. I don't feel like there was some other, I mean, we got together with my family, I guess, for my wife's family for Easter. My family doesn't get together for Easter, but my wife's family.
Did your kids do like Easter egg hunt or something?
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
But you know, like there are five total kids between the two families. One is like a full blown, like almost high schooler. So like not real interested in the Easter egg hunt.
Yeah.
One is like, you know, 13. So like coming up on that age where you're like lower interest, and there's our two kids. So like they went through the process, but like, you know, it was relatively low key. Plus we did it inside because
The weather
was rainy and terrible. And we didn't dye eggs this year for the first time in a long time. Too expensive, I guess. I don't know.
Just go with the plastic ones or what?
Yeah. My wife or my mother-in-law, she wanted to do like they painted flower pots. And then they like planted some herbs and stuff was kind of the idea. So they just did a different craft activity this year.
Okay. Different variation of stuff. All right.
I mean, I still feel like that had to be more than the eggs. I can't.
Yeah.
Planting a whole pot plants. And the paint to plant them and the plants to go in them, the soil. I mean, at least I'll get some fresh basil this spring, which would be nice, you know, put that stuff in my food.
You are 40 or whatever. I mean, the fact that you're excited about I get some fresh basil.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, man. That's what it's like to cook. I like some cilantro or basil or. Yeah.
I mean,
have you ever purchased basil?
No.
Do you have any idea how egregiously high it's priced for what it is? You get this little clamshell package.
Mm-hmm. I know what the package looks like.
It comes with like
six of them.
Six leaves of basil, and they want $47 for it.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm forced to use dry basil like a peasant. And I want fresh. I want the good stuff in my pasta. And I can't afford it because it's a ludicrous price for basil. So now I can grow some. It's actually good for me. That's what this is, the kind of stuff at 40 you get excited about.
We'll get back into some of the happenings in the week in regards to the draft, by the way, in about 30 minutes. There's some new rumors out there. We're going to see more of them heading into it. A couple of them don't really pertain to the Chiefs, but bigger picture, what could happen at the top end of the draft could impact your chance to win $965 at our draft party at the Landing coming up on Thursday. So we'll get there. But we do start with the Royals, who wrapped up their road trip. Thank goodness they wrapped up that road trip.
Yeah.
10 games
good
on the road. We going in said, hey, worst case, got to go 4-6. truly got to go 500. They end up going 2-8 on the road. They get a win yesterday to snap the 6-game losing streak. And we will only know as time goes on this week how massive it was, but it feels like yesterday's win was massive. Stop the streak. Feel good about yourself.
Especially against Scooble.
Briefly. You do it against Scooble. Some positives out of that. We'll talk about Carlos Estevez individually in a little bit. He continues to be one of the biggest bright spots on the entire team to this point in time. Now, time's going to tell. Was it a massive win or not? I mean, if they go out and do not perform well against the Rockies starting tomorrow and the Astros this weekend out at Kauffman for this homestand, then Sunday's win wasn't the start of anything. And it just was a stop the losing streak, and that's kind of it. But the win at the moment, right this second, feels like it potentially could be a massive one. And we can get into expectations for the week and everything. The Rockies are not any good. They also stink on offense as well. Something's got to give there. That seems like an opportunity to truly get right. But it's baseball, right? This is not playing a cupcake in college football week one of the season where you feel like it's an automatic win. This is baseball. The Rockies, even if they're going to lose 110 games, they're still going to win 50-something. So that's where things stand. But I feel like yesterday was a massive, massive win. And kind of just take a deep breath for a second.
That's what it is. We can talk about, like you said, the MJ part or all this other stuff that took place this weekend. We all thought the same thing. They lose that game on Saturday, and you're like, and your reward for a 6-game losing streak is having to face last year's Cy Young Award winner on Sunday? Well, that's a nightmare. I mean, that's just one of the worst cases scenario. Like, and as we're going to point out, like, the schedule does lighten up a little based on what you had been seeing, where most of these teams are where you are. A below 500 baseball team. They're in that similar area, that same spot where at least you can contend with it. Yeah, I always say it's a little too much to just straight up ask for a sweep. But if you win against Scooble and then at least win 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 3 against the Rockies, a team who is the only team in baseball with a worse offense than you, then at least you could do it. Then at least you could like feel better about yourself. You'd be 12-14 or 11-15 where things were heading in a good direction. There is no way to sugarcoat it. That was a miserable road trip and almost impossible to watch team because the offense was so bad. This is worse than at any point last year I watched this offense. This goes back to like some of the worst offenses I've seen the last decade for like a month, a three-week stretch. And it was miserable. And I think it was in their head. I think everyone was pressing
in a million,
other than Bobby, apparently, who doesn't matter. He's got a 14-15 game hitting streak now. He's fine pretty much all the time. So outside of him, everyone. And it's not like yesterday they didn't still struggle. But to watch Vinny get a hit off Scooble to score a run that ends up being a difference, and to watch Bobby get the game-winning run in extras and watch the closers and the bullpen shut it down when they got a runner on second and know that they can't let someone score, at least you can feel good about yourself heading back home. You get back to Kauffman, you can sigh of relief.
That's what it is. It's a sigh of relief. And as I said, we're going to find out how big of a win it was based on how this week goes. It's not just because they won yesterday. Everything's not fixed. You can't erase the road trip. Now, mentally, the guys on the team, they have to erase the road trip. They have to move on. But as fans, totally understand, right? They have to prove to you once again, starting this week, that the offense is correctable. Matt Quatrero was on Sirius XM MLB Network Radio just before yesterday's game, talking about the beginning of the season and what's been going wrong with the offense.
The beginning of the season is always magnified, right? Wins and losses, ERAs. I mean, you can go countless examples, but you know, somebody gets off to a good first week and they have a 1700 OPS. And, you know, is this sustainable? Like, no, it's not. No one's ever finished the season with a 1700 OPS or a 100 OPS, whatever it is, right? I mean, things are going to change. Does it stink in the moment when it's not going your way? Absolutely. And that's, we're all guilty of it, right? We're looking at this morning, sitting here talking about things within our group. And, you know, you're looking at 49 plate appearances or 62 plate appearances. Like that's just not enough, right? And anybody that's ever been involved in hitting knows how volatile that is and how much the mental part of it comes into play too. These guys, their swings haven't changed in the first 21 games, or their physical abilities haven't changed in the first 21 games. You know, these
I got to stop the cut. Whoever the XM host there, just breathing into the mic like no other. I did not catch that until Drew ruled that in. I heard the audio on Twitter last
and
night.
And it probably is only Holy bothering cow. You because you had headphones in. On.
Anybody else hear that? Well, that's just not me,
oh,
right?
Oh, no, I definitely heard it. It's driving me crazy. At first, I thought maybe someone was on the roof of the building.
I don't know if you noticed. 10 seconds in the clip, I purposely backed away from the microphone to make sure you knew it wasn't me. Then I'm like, maybe it's Cody.
And no,
like,
no, I was being silent. I was making sure.
I'm like, holy cow.
When I was playing it and rolling it in, I didn't hear anything. Granted, I wasn't wearing headphones when I was rolling it in.
This is actually lesson one. I teach like day one stuff. I teach the kids in the podcast class here in KC.
Their nose was just breathing right into the mic.
Is to record part of it that you're not going to use, the room and all this, and listen back to it, your voice.
To make sure.
With headphones to make sure that like, and this is
not yours. People on the text line said they couldn't hear it. Yeah, you're lucky because it was driving me crazy. So. It was just like truly like nose, like nostril right on the microphone, just breathing in and
out. I'm not sure if he was like he had his mouth over the top of the microphone. Maybe. I'm a little bit worried for that man.
Holy
or
cow.
Like, you know, like there's other health things going on that cause him to. But like, look, listen to that. This is the weirdest way I have felt about a Royals team in a while, because right now the Royals are a miserably bad offense on paper, right? There's no part about it. They have scored more than four runs all of twice in their over 20 games this season. They have scored four runs or more less than 30% of the time this year and win a lot when they're doing it, because you're like, okay, I feel bad about all the offensive stuff. I feel bad about every player that isn't Bobby Wood Jr. as far as the way they've started offensively. They've eventually sent a player down as a result of that. They have a top three pitching staff in baseball. So like, it's so hard because they're pitching lights out. The bullpen is really good. I mean, Daniel Lynch just gave up his first run of the season yesterday. You mentioned Estevez, who we can get to later. The starting rotation continues. You just put out hit after hit. Keep putting the team in position to win every day. They got a chance, but then they can't score. And I'm like, if you just hit a little, it's so
that adds to the frustration. Yeah.
Yeah, it does, because it feels like it should be 500 at worst based on the pitching and you're not. Then over the weekend, something that we had discussed happening, we said it might take all the way back to the homestand, but did not, which is the Royals sent out MJ Melendez over the weekend. I don't think we can ask the longer term question. I don't think they had a choice left. MJ, unfortunately, as we discussed last week, was lost. And if you were that lost at the plate and I don't know if he's lacking confidence but like if you're hitting like that, we have to make decisions based on the future health of this team. And we need your roster spot at the moment to go to somebody else who's going to do it. The long term question is, does MJ Melendez ever play for the Kansas City Royals Major League Baseball team again? And if he does he ever become a full-time starter for this team again? You'd mentioned JJ Piccolo. We'll play that, and then we can kind of open up on that. But this is what JJ had to say about the decision to send down MJ.
There's never a right day or right time. It's just you get a feel for what's going on with the team and how a player's performing. But it was something we've been discussing for the last week or so, knowing that Mark was going to be back. And unfortunately, you know, somebody's going to be left out. In this case, it was MJ, and just want to see him go back to the minor leagues and continue the work that he's doing.
What hasn't happened make the story time for him beyond the move that was needed?
Yeah, well, first, I'd just say I give him a lot of credit, because he spent the whole offseason working on something that we believe he's on the right path. Made a couple other adjustments while we were in New York and saw it pay off a little bit. But, that is changes like that. Need to take a little bit. It will take a little bit of time, and sometimes the setting is just best not at this level. Maybe in AAA, where he can relax a little bit and reset, and continue working on the things he's trying to do.
So that was JJ Piccolo talking with Joel Goldberg there, who put out the video and audio on Saturday when the move happened. We wondered what the corresponding move would be once Mark Canha was coming back off the IL list. We wondered, hey, would they just simply send down Drew Waters? Would Tolbert be part of it? They obviously made the decision to send on MJ Melendez, who was hitting 0.085, and we all saw the struggles that he was having to open up this campaign. As far as you're asking the bigger picture question, look, it feels like this is not a go down for a week or two and come back up. This feels like it's a longer term, you know, if you're going to do a true reset and we talk about the team taking a deep breath, take a deep breath, reset, not feel like everybody is, you know, every at-bat is magnified because you're on the big league roster where the entire team is struggling. And so every at-bat, you know, that you don't succeed, it gets even worse for you because, you know, the team itself has nothing going on offense. And so now you go to AAA where you can, in a weird way, you know, really just focus on yourself, right? And and worry about that and see what happens. It doesn't feel like this is just a couple week reset. This feels like it could be longer term. And, you know, for me to sit here and say he'll never be up or start again, I think that's hard to say. And I would probably not agree with that. He's 26 years old. I think he'll be up at some point again. But as you said, as a starter, I don't know. I mean, injuries happen too, so keep that in mind. Some of this also does depend long term on what his CAGS season look like. If it's later on, if it's in June and CAGS is in AAA, what does that do? All of a sudden, you have two options maybe once he starts to play outfield. But look, it had to happen at some point. I wondered if it was going to happen at the end of the road trip. I guess it basically did. It happened 2 days before the end of the road trip. As JJ Piccolo said in some other comments as well, it's like, you know, the team struggling anytime individual stuff is also super magnified. Like if the Royals were playing well offensively, and look, maybe because he was hitting plus 0.85 or 0.085, that would have been the result anyway. But if the team was winning, you could have been even more patient. Although that's one thing that nobody can argue with. They were plenty patient with him.
I mean, he spent, and this is what's going to be really weird for MJ Melendez, and is going to take, I think, a few days to probably not, like, the biggest challenge for MJ here is, how do you let this not ruin your career? Like, as in, like, how do you not let this take over your career? Gold, he has spent three straight full seasons, not like an up and down guy, not Olivares, not riding 35 down and up from Omaha. He has spent full
29,
three
right?
straight, yeah, or 29, sorry. He spent,
I get him confused. Yeah, I get him confused.
29. He spent three straight full seasons as a big league player. Every day. Played like 130 games, 3 years in a row, started with a big league club this year, was in the lineup a huge majority of it until the last week or so when he struggled. He doesn't even, I don't even know if he remembers what it's like to be a minor league player, to have that kind of, so like, this is going to be a massive, massive hit to anyone's confidence, I would think. And it's how you adjust coming out of that, that they're like, hey, we actually think some of those swing changes are still the right thing for you in the long run. But it's like, well, the thing, and I would say that this is the toughest part. The thing I was doing before was at least keeping me in the big leagues. Like I was at least a big league player. I went to your change and now I don't even get to play in the pros. Like it would be hard for me if they still think the changes they make are the ones that are made are still the right ones for him. It'd be hard for me to actually believe that now versus this cost me a chance to be in the big leagues. And so it's really tough. I feel terrible for him, the person. Obviously, you don't want people to get sent down. I just don't feel like the Royals had a choice.
But you have to perform at the big league level. Have to perform.
Yeah.
And he simply wasn't. And as you said, they gave him a lot of time and he's been up with the big league club for a while and was not able to get to the level that everybody's excited about and maybe once getting to based on what he was doing in the minors 4 years ago or whatever, when he was hitting 40 home runs and you were like, wow, this could be, you know, at one point we thought, you know, the future catcher for the organization. Then he became a left fielder, and to his credit, he became a very good left fielder, best corner outfielder from a defensive perspective.
For sure.
But the results at the plate simply were not there. And so that move happened. And we can talk later on in the 11 o'clock hour about like what's, if things go bad this week, what's the next move? Because a lot of people would say, all right, maybe this is step one of getting things corrected. Nobody's saying that this solves the offense suddenly or anything like that. There's other issues with the team. There's other issues with the approach from other guys as well. And, you know, if you're trying to be really optimistic about it, and I see a few people on the text line, you're saying, all right, well, Mike Moustakas was once sent down and things changed for sure, right? Like that's the optimistic way to look at it. And that's what if you are someone like MJ Melendez, you got to think, okay, can I do that same thing? Now, remember, yeah, you guys,
I'd have Alex Cordon almost talk to him. Mike Moustakas talk to him.
Moustakas went down for a brief stint and an injury got him back up immediately. And then he just, for whatever reason, a switch flipped. Like, I don't know whether it's just the feeling of getting sent down or what, something changed for him, right? This doesn't feel like it's going to be necessarily the short stint.
But if an injury happened, he'd probably be the first one called up, wouldn't he? Like if somebody got hurt in left field, wouldn't they just call him right back up immediately? See, history would suggest yes, but
maybe I guess based on the comments though from JJ Piccolo, yeah, if you're talking about the player needs to reset and there's things he needs to learn and adjust to at the, you can't do it at the big league level, then what changed in a week? I actually don't think he would be. You know, if an injury happened a month from now, Cody, maybe. But like, let's say somebody got hurt in 7 days from now. No, I don't think he would be the next name. I think you would see a Gentry or Rave, because if you're trying to actually fix the issue, then calling him back up after a week, even doing an injury, doesn't solve anything.
Like looking back through, I'm like, when did Mike Moustakas, like how long? You're right. I mean, it was just such a little amount of, not a little amount, but like it wasn't the amount of time that you would think for a player. And it was a little bit slightly earlier on in his career that trip happened, right? He was only two, but same age, you know, like similar age, 25 years old, 26. I mean, I'm not saying MJ has no chance to succeed at the big league level. I definitely think he's still...
I still think he'll be back at some point.
There's still some raw talent part of it, but yeah, this is the best thing for him. Just reality is this is the best thing for him. You had mentioned a guy in Double A right now.
That went over the scoreboard.
That sounded good.
Another jack for Jack.
That's a good one.
Jack Watch.
As you know, we are continuing to keep an eye on Jack Caglione in Double A because we're planning our road trip down to Springfield to watch him on Saturday, May 3rd. You have until this Wednesday to put in a t-shirt order if you are planning on coming down to the game. If you need that link, let us know, 913-586-7965. That is four people going on the trip. The tickets are available at 96.5thefan.com.
107. 107 listeners have already signed up to join us.
So 111 of us total going down there. That's awesome, by the way. And so if you just want to be a part of the crowd, no doubt about it. Jack had gone a little quiet, you know? Like, I thought, oh, man, maybe Jack's struggling a little bit. You know,
they
figured out, you know, he's human after all. And they gave us a little reminder about why we're maybe trying to go see him on, why we are going to go see him on May 3rd.
Delivers. Caglione gives it a ride out to left. Continuing to carry at the track, at the wall, it's out of here. Jack Caglione, 110 off the bat, a screamer for three runs to put the Naturals back on top by six. It's their third big fly of the affair.
So Jack Caglione has 20 ribbies, four home runs, hit a grand slam over the weekend. So just going to say, if you were interested in watching Jack Caglione play, this feels like the moment as we're all going down to Springfield in less than 2 weeks.
Yeah, and an early look, I know things change, but as of right this second, it's supposed to be 72 degrees and sunny in Springfield for the game. So if you were hesitant on because of weather, hesitant about, you know, timing everything, yeah, still time for you to get your tickets. And as you said, the t-shirt deadline is this Wednesday, but plenty of time to get your tickets as well. $10 deal through our Cody and Gold ticket offer that we've got with them. And it's going to be a full crowd. That one of the sections is almost totally full. We're moving on to the next section already. That's because we, again, have 107 listeners. So I think we're going to get over 150 people to join us in Springfield.
So we'll meet at Harbell's beforehand. That's where we'll hand out the shirts for everyone to go into Hammond's Field to watch the game. We just want to remind everybody, but again, 96.5 The Fan, if you want a look at the ticket price. They're $10 for the tickets, $10 for the shirts.
I believe we looked up the promotional schedule already, and that Saturday, when we're down there, it's like that, what is it, halfway to Halloween or something, so they're doing some special unis. I wish they were not doing the Halloween thing, and instead we're doing what they announced 2 days ago. Did you see, now this is the Cardinals affiliate doing this, not the Royals, but Springfield is where cashew chicken was invented. Back in the 60s, cashew chicken. And Darren Revell put out a tweet over the weekend that I guess the Springfield Cardinals are wearing an alternate jersey at some point this season, a totally different identity. They're going to be the Springfield Cashew Chickens for a couple games this year. And the jersey is absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. I wish they were wearing this when we were going down there. The Cashew Chickens.
When are they? God, well, yeah, why aren't they? They should just go with that for the whole year.
The hat is pretty incredible.
Minor league is better about drawing people in with stuff like this.
They can do that stuff, right? There's not as much. Nobody's going to be upset about the tradition of the uniforms and things like that.
We get way too hung up on that. Like, you know, like hundreds of millions of people watch WrestleMania. They put on like a whole show. Savannah Bananas have been selling out football stadiums. Entertainment should be a part of the sport for your own sake. That way you're not like missing out on it. But yeah, I did see those. The cashew chicken ones look incredible. Jack Caglione's doing exactly what you'd hope he'd do at Double A. Hitting pretty well. Should hit for a slightly higher average. Should walk a little bit more and strike out a little bit less. Things I would expect to occur as he grows at the Double A level. Are you, I mean, 10 games? 10 games away? Jack can hit a few more homers? I so bad want him to hit a home run over there.
Oh, it'd be incredible.
I don't know if we're going to get lucky enough. I don't know if we're just like fortunate enough people to witness that. Please. Please let Jack Caglione hit a home run while we're there on May 3rd. Wouldn't that make this all worth it for us?
Remember, one of our listeners is going to throw out the first pitch, too. That'll be randomly selected amongst somebody that buys tickets using our Cody and Gold ticket link. So somebody will get their information to the Cardinals, and we'll get that figured out. But somebody from our group going to throw out the first pitch.
Not us.
Has to be a listener. Yeah.
Definitely going to make it a
Has
listener.
Has to be a listener.
Well, I mean, could you imagine, like, we get to throw out the first pitch and instead it's just like, it's one of us. Feels very selfish.
No, it has to be a listener.
Plus, you've said you're never throwing out a first pitch
ever again in your life.
So it would only be down to me and Drew anyway.
Those moments are special when you only do them a few times. You know, I threw out a first pitch, now I'm done. I've won a hot dog derby race, I'm done. I've won a potato race at a minor league game, I'm done. I don't need to keep doing these things. I do it once, you go out on top. And except for the case of the first pitch. And then
you did
you're
go
done.
Out on top on that one.
Nope.
You did go out
nope.
on top on the, nope. the races, though. I can't argue with that.
But
if someone
it.
From the Royals is listening, if you got a date in mind, just go ahead and let me know. I'd like to go ahead and get myself back in the hot dog race.
I think you should be done. I think they should ban you.
I'll be honest. I think this Sunday might be perfect. It is UMKC day at the K.
And now you want to embarrass your alma mater.
Game. I've already embarrassed myself four times. What's the difference? So if you're listening and you work for the Royals and you schedule out the hot dog derbies race, I'd like to race this Sunday, please, for UMKC day.
You should be capped. You have capped on.
Capped at what? How many?
Four? You've done it four or five times. That's it. You should be done. It's time to give other people an opportunity.
Never. Not till I win. Not till I win, you know? I'll retire when I win. I don't know if that's ever going to happen. Hopefully this time I'm not up against a former, I haven't beaten regular people either, but
I'll say you lost to me, dude.
But I know I got no chance if it's a former professional soccer player. I'd like people who are my height or less. That feels like it gives me the best chance, but still not a perfect chance. Look, I may never win, but I'm going to try until I do. I've made that part very clear. I'll never quit.
All right. Up next, we know we are now in draft week. Thursday, we'll be at the landing. So let's talk about the latest rumors and rumblings, what it could mean for the top of the draft. Plus, what is that next move if some of the struggles continue for the Royals? We're just getting started here on a Monday. Hope you're off to a great day. Rain's out of the way. Gonna be a nice day here in Kansas City. Thanks for joining us. As always, you can interact with us on the Jays Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Let's talk some draft, though, because it all begins Thursday night, 6 o'clock. Hope to see you guys at our draft party this Thursday night at the Landing in Liberty. Bank and Christian Osero have their draft special tonight, by the way. Since there's no Royals baseball, they'll be on at 6 o'clock talking all things draft. I think Chad Ryder is going to be on their show as well, one of the draft experts that are out there, well known. So they've got your draft coverage this evening. But there's some rumblings out there from the weekend. What's going to happen with some teams and potential landing spots for Shedeur Sanders? There's Adam Schefter talking about the Broncos. Let's start with the Broncos because that's in the division. We all know the Chiefs have dominated the AFC West, winning it for 9 straight years. So every team has been hunting down the Chiefs. Adam Schefter said there's a lack of teams wanting to trade up. It goes back to what we mentioned last week. Just why would you trade up as much this year? Given
it's not a good year to be in the top 10. Yeah,
but he did say Denver. The Broncos, at least one of the teams who have inquired with teams about moving up in the draft. And even though it could be smokescreen, if you're thinking about the Broncos trading up, everybody assumes that that would mean Ashton Jeanty, right? Like, could they get ahead of the Raiders or something like that? Now, maybe it's surprise and they trade up and they want to make sure they get one of the tight ends. I don't know if they have to trade up to do that. But what else would it be if the Broncos do trade up from their draft position? Where do you think they're going? Wouldn't it be for Ashton Jeanty? Don't you believe?
I think it'd have to be for something for Bo Nix. Like, I'm not saying
so
they don't
offensive
have
skill position.
Yeah,
player.
I don't think unless they're just like, because their offensive line, it's not for that.
Because they're 20 overall. Can they get that? How high can they get?
I don't think they can get. Ashton Jeanty. There's no way. All the rumors on the Jeanty front. There's three rumors. Mm-hmm. There's Jeanty's going to go 4 to the Patriots. That the Bears are just like praying that Ashton Jeanty falls all the way down to 10 to them. So, like, at bare minimum, you got to get to at least 10 to get Ashton Jeanty. And that's if for some reason the Raiders actually pass on him, which I think is certainly possible, at least on that end. I think it's got to be for an offensive. It's got to be.
I think it's for a tight end. I think ultimately you go from 20 to 15, Warren. And it's Warren or Loveland, right? Depending on how that flow goes. There was even some rumors over the weekend that we were joking when you said that you think Loveland is just as good as Warren. There was one draft expert over the weekend said that there's a chance Loveland goes before Warren. I think that's crazy.
I don't think that's happening. I just think Loveland is just as good as Warren.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
The Broncos would to trade from 20 to get to the top 10 to get Jeanty. That's way too much draft capital, I think. Now, look, the Broncos want to do that. I actually think that's a good thing overall for the Chiefs if they're going to trade that many picks away, even though Ashton Jeanty's the real deal. But could they, yeah, trade up 5 to 6 spots to go ensure themselves a tight end? You mentioned the style of offense Sean Payton likes. We know if you go back to what they would do with Drew Brees for many years, we saw some of it last year with Bo Nix, but they would love to have a reliable tight end that can be a difference maker in Loveland or Warren. Ensuring you get one of them could be the trade up.
I mean, they're one of the few teams that makes sense because 20 is an interesting spot. You can't really get at 20 in this year's draft. You can get your absolute pick of the litter of a lot of positions, but not wide receiver and not tight end. Those two guys, I believe, will be gone before pick 20, which means if that's what you want specifically, let's say you want McMillan, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, but if you want those two positions, like you want a skill position player to go opposite your guy in Bo Nix, well, then you do have to kind of move up in order to get it. If you just want any of the other defensive linemen who are going to be remaining, no problem. You even want one of those guard tackle, which they shouldn't. They had the number one offensive line in the league last year and have a huge chunk of it under control. So like if Schefter's saying, and he did in his article today up at ESPN, say that they're one of the teams who have at least inquired about trading up, I gotta think it's a tight end. I mean, borderline or one of the wide receivers, they're in love with Burden and they don't think he's actually going to be available at 20, even though he goes in mock drafts. He is the most inconsistent. As many mock drafts I've looked at this point, easily the most inconsistently mocked player in the entire potential first round. He goes as high as 14 in some and as low as 44. There's no way he's a 30-pick swing. And yet, there does seem to be some sort of movement in that. The other fascinating thing to me is, like, I mean, we talked about quarterback before, is similar to the Falcons, is there any other team we should be talking about for Sanders? Or are we only entertaining Saints, Giants, or Steelers? That's the only three teams that Sanders can be drafted by.
I think it's those three, because even if you think the Browns take Travis Hunter at 2 and then get back into the first round and draft a quarterback, I don't see how the Browns get back into the first round and leapfrog.
You don't want to bring up the Cowboys and do like the out of left field, like they just do it for Dion's kid kind of thing.
I don't think the Cowboys even do that. I don't.
The Jets, they're just like whatever on fields.
I could hear the Jets. I could hear the case for the Jets at 7.
Team to entertain.
Yeah, I could hear the Jets at 7, but I do think, you know, there's more and more noise that Jackson Dart's going to go way even higher than everybody thought. That Jackson Dart could be the pick at 9. That he's the quarterback off the board before Sanders, and then Sanders goes, a couple picks later. So,
like, are we sure the Panthers definitely want Bryce Young?
Oh yeah. That I definitively think is clear. There was that Bryce Young is going to be their guy.
There was an interesting one that I saw.
Okay,
the Colts potentially.
So the Colts have Anthony Richardson and Daniel Jones.
I don't know why they wouldn't want to draft a quarterback.
In other words, they don't have a quarterback. So they're, you know, Chris Ballard's out there today talking about how they got to make a decision. Jim Irsay is going to be heavily involved. They got a quarterback competition. Here, that the reason why that one would be fun is the trickle-down effect. So let's say in this hypothetical, Drew, you brought it up, Sanders gets drafted by the Colts. So they have Richardson, Sanders, Daniel Jones.
They start Daniel Jones the year, and then they hand it to Sanders eventually.
If I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers, whichever one of between Jones and Richardson I actually like, I'm trading for him. That's my answer to the Rodgers maybe deciding to actually retire.
You're probably get Richardson for a 6.
I was going to say, if I was the Colts, I'd give up Richardson right now, and before the draft, you might be able to get more.
Well, that too. Either way, you know, this is where the Steelers, how confident are they that Aaron Rodgers doesn't wake up one morning, as we joked, from a cave and decide not to play football again, and then the next day decide he wants to play again. So we don't know. But if he does decide not to play, right now you have Mason Rudolph and Skylar Thompson. So the Colts would be one to watch because there's no way they're going into the season with Richardson, Jones, and Sanders. Somebody's moving. Mm-hmm. Somebody's moving.
I think a lot of times you could put those in, like, I think people want to sometimes pinpoint those to the developmental guys. Like, well, the Colts will take, like, Quinn Ewers in the third. But a lot of times those teams, if they love a guy, if they love Sanders, they don't do it like that. And they take their guy earlier than we anticipate versus these, like, methodical, we'll train him behind Derek Carr for a year. Look, I mentioned the Saints as a possibility. I definitely think they're in quarterback draft mode, but, you know.
The one thing with the Saints that we don't have the answer to, and we're not going to know till Thursday, is did the Saints like Shedeur Sanders before it became more and more realistic that, you know, the Derek Carr, it's not just the Derek Carr injury. There's more rumblings that, like, Derek Carr kind of wants out, maybe of New Orleans as well. So have they done enough research and they know that they like Sanders? If they don't like Sanders, they don't all of a sudden like him more just because there's an injury.
Yeah, whoever liked Tyler Shough, they just like him more.
If they like Sanders a month ago, and the injury should only enhance that, but you're not going to completely flip-flop on it. So, you know, yes, I think the Saints should take a quarterback, but if they don't like Shedeur Sanders, then they're not going to take Shedeur Sanders. It's that simple. I don't think they're going to reach on him unless they actually had some intrigue and liked him as a quarterback prospect. If they like Jackson Dart better, maybe they do take him. Or you mentioned Show, all of a sudden is coming out of nowhere. Honestly, I don't know.
Schefter mentioned that there are teams that have him as their number one quarterback on their board. Like, he's above 20, Cam Ward.
He'll be 26 by week one.
Well, no wonder he looks good. He's playing against kids. He's a full-grown man with a 401k, and he's playing against children. Shocker. He looks good. He's going to be 26, Drew. Even, I know I get accused of being an ageist on the show. You have to admit, 26 is too damn old to be a draft prospect.
Oh, well, okay.
That's crazy.
26 is old. It's like Brandon, Brandon Whedon territory.
You get to the end of his contract, and he's 30? You get to the end of his rookie contract, and he's 30. Mahomes isn't 30. He just he's 30 now.
I think the reason that people like him too is that he's in a system, and really has always been in a system with Texas Tech in the air raid, and then with Jeff Brom. Aiden O'Connell played and looked great with Jeff Brom when he was at Purdue, and he was picked in the fourth or fifth round. I don't think Tyler Shough looking good in college means that he's going to be great in the NFL. I think it's some more of the system that he's been in than anything else, why his numbers look good.
But if I'm in the if I'm in the second or third round, and I'll keep using Cleveland in this example, they get Hunter at two, but they have a second round pick or a third round pick, and he's on the board, why wouldn't they take him? Have him in the mix. I mean, that's fine. I wouldn't take him in the first round, but if he's there in the second or third round, why wouldn't you? A team like Cleveland, I'll continue to mention Pittsburgh. Why wouldn't the Steelers, who currently have Mason Rudolph and Skylar Thompson, if they can't get Sanders, they don't like him, they can't get Dart, they don't like him, they can't get Miller, they don't like him or whatever, why wouldn't they look at this kid in the second or third round? I say kid, he's not a kid anymore, he's 26.
I mean, at that stage, you're having a slightly different conversation. You still hate that if you get him, if he's great, this is the part that stinks, because it's so hard to get quarterback right. If he's great, what do you get, 10 years? I'm not saying that's better than 0 years at bad quarterback play, but man, that's kind of sucks. You only get 10 high-level years out of him.
For the Browns, though, you would take 10 good years in a heartbeat.
I know. I'm not saying that's not an improvement, Drew, but you have to admit, when you finally take the quarterback, if you took him in the first round, let's say, you got to be trying to get more than, if you're taking him in the third, whatever, but you got to be thinking you're getting more than 10 years out of that guy.
Yeah, but if he's that, in your evaluation, if he's a starting quarterback, can be a starting quarterback for you, given some of the situations these franchises have had.
It's an improvement.
I wouldn't draft him in the top 10 or top 15, but like, why? I wouldn't avoid him in the second round. If you actually think he's that good,
how many regimes
in the NFL don't make it 6 years? The coach and the GM are, thrown out the door before that. So you're not drafting him saying, oh, we only got 10 years. That's why he's not a top tier pick. But 10 years, how many, I'd love to go back and how many quarterbacks have started for the same team for the last 10 years? Not that many.
I mean, not currently. There was probably more in the generation before. Russ probably did 10 years in Seattle, do we think? He's not starting for him now, but he got 10 years in Seattle.
If he did, he barely got there, yeah.
I'll bet he got 10 seasons, didn't he?
He also was a little bit older when he came out of the draft.
My point is that most of the league is... doesn't have same starting quarterback for 10 years, right?
It might be 10 seasons.
If you're the Chiefs,
Cody.
If you're the Bills, you're going to,
Russ so got exactly
right
10
at
years.
10.
Yeah. And it's like, look, they wouldn't go back and not take him in the third. My argument is not take him at all. My argument is do not Brandon Whedon this situation. Do not take a guy in the first round who is also 26 years old in unsure quarterback draft. That ain't the time to take swings.
Well, and Brandon Whedon was also Oklahoma State ran the air raid at that time. He looked really good in the air raid system. Of course he was, there. Like, Patrick Mahomes is maybe one of the only quarterbacks to actually play in the air raid, look really good in the air raid, and still have major success at the NFL level. Where, like, Gardner Minshew was outstanding in college, played in the air raid at Washington State, and has been a fine,
Kyler Murray,
good backup.
When the air raid guy?
Oklahoma, I don't know if they were air raid as much as they were just spread in general, but
okay. They've aired it out.
I just wonder if guys that like play in that system they put up these ridiculous college stats, they don't tend to transition that well to the NFL for whatever reason. It just doesn't. Like, you could pull Oklahoma State quarterback after Oklahoma State quarterback or Washington State guys, and they're just not.
But based on that, no one should have taken. The issue is like, it's true till it's not, because like that was the whole thing with Mahomes. Mahomes was the first ever quarterback out of the new Big 12 to win a playoff game. You couldn't even take, not kidding, you could not take, he's the first quarterback ever to win a Big 12, a playoff game for a Big 12 quarterback. So to that point, you had to avoid him. It's tough. Age is probably even more than that. Let's get back to the Royals for just a little bit because I am fascinated by them. JJ Piccolo will join us tomorrow at 10:30, by the way. So we'll get a chance to talk to him about some of the moves they've made here recently. We have to admit that there has to be some next adjustment is if over this homestand, this continues in the way that it went on that road trip. Colorado is a team that scores worse than you. You're at home. They have a huge stretch of below 500 teams coming up on their schedule. I kind of view this as like the, okay, now you get like another week or two, barely, to sort some of this out. And then I'm going to be asking you what's next, as in sure. Renfro or lineup changes, or like, I'm going to ask you fundamentally, what is the next move if you don't do this? I guess Renfro is probably the obvious one, but there's some other stuff order-wise that would kind of make sense to me.
Yeah, the next couple like smaller moves, if the offense doesn't get going in the next week, you know, I still wonder why they like the ability on the base pass, but if you're not getting guys on base and you're not willing to pinch run as often anyway, then Tyler Tolbert, is much as he hasn't done anything wrong, but you know, is that a spot you're willing to continue to hold for a guy that doesn't have the bat, right, when your offense is struggling? So something like that. Let's continue to see how Drew Waters performs. You know, he got off to the rough start in the field, but they ended up keeping him up instead of sending him down. They sent down MJ Melendez. So how close were they to sending Drew Waters down? Is that another potential move? You know,
helped him win yesterday.
You know, the bullpen wise, where they're at, like, we'll have to keep an eye. You know, Hunter Harvey, how long is that thing going to be for the Hunter Harvey injury? I don't know what that timeline is. Obviously, Sam Long, due to performance slash injury, you know, he's on the IL right now. Where does that thing stand? That's pitching stuff. But my point is, I think as far as other moves, the biggest thing probably is lineup changes. I think we are still a ways away from having a real discussion about hitting coach. I think it's too early
I agree.
You know, that's to me something that just lives on social media for those calling for a change there. That's not a realistic thing at this point. But you're right about the stretch of games. I know we're going to talk about more tomorrow when the series begins against the Rockies, but they are going to enter a 2.5-3 week stretch of opponents where there's an opportunity, unless you are also one of those opponents, meaning not above 500 team, where you can get some things right, where you can correct the issues that you have had to where you can get right back into this thing. Even not that your season is over, but for fan buy-in, right? Get back to 500. Like if you're going to get back to 500, this stretch of the next 2 weeks is a good chance to do that based on some of the opponents on paper, at least.
There's one thing, and I do not think that this is an overreaction because I understand he missed some time too. Mark Canha should be hitting fourth or fifth. And I think what I've learned about the Royals,
right?
Yeah, what I've learned about the Royals the last, I think he should be hitting ahead of Salvi, behind Vinny, but ahead of Salvi, just as a way of like pushing Salvi down a spot because Canha's giving those more professional at bats right now. I still think you want the lefty righty thing. That's why I'm not shoving Vinny further down the order. I thought he was down the order
yesterday, right?
I think that was because of Scoopel. I don't think that had anything to
we'll
do
find
with
out
their
tomorrow,
normal
right?
plan. Yeah, I could be wrong. My assumption is that was because they were facing the league's toughest lefty and they wanted to go righties all across the board. The reason for Canha is the same thing I learned about this team last year. Because of the inconsistency and the lack of on base from guys like MJ, Massey, Salvi, these other guys who've been in the lineup these last 2 years, every time they just find some like quality big league bat and eventually plug them into four, it's smoother. Or fifth, it's smoother. It was Gurriel last year. And like, I'm not saying those guys deserve to hit fourth for most teams. I'm not even saying they're necessarily a better hitter than the person they're hitting fourth. But because of the way they give a professional at bat in the middle of the order, it seems to change their offense for the better more commonly. Right now, the next move I would make almost automatically is Canha's moving up. He's going ahead of anybody at the bare minimum. Fifth behind Salvi, like just bare
yeah, for the
minimum.
For the time being, while
he's going there, but I would argue maybe a spot ahead.
For the time being, while guys aren't hitting well, you know, and we had Jake Eisenberg on the show last Friday. What did he mention, Cody? He talked about how many balls are hitting in the air, right? Fly balls has been a problem actually for them, you know. And so we saw a little bit of an adjustment on Sunday in particular, Saturday, I guess, also even though they lost, but still a little bit on Saturday, where like for this team that actually is a quote unquote good sign for them. Based off of what we have seen, like normally, You know, mm-hmm. you take a look at some of the metrics and you're trying to figure out what's going wrong. That would be one thing that was actually a good sign. Putting the ball in the air less is what they need to do right now, and just kind of not try to press. And we saw a little bit of an adjustment. We'll see if that carries over. And for whatever reason, you know, yesterday with Skubal, that the Royals have, you know, for a guy that's been in won a Cy Young last year, they've been able to have good approach against him. I don't know why. They've been able to...
I told you they had the league's best ERA against him
last year. They beat him multiple times. So that's just a guy that they have figured something out against him, which is a good thing. He's in your division.
It was four starts last year they had against him, and he went 2-2, and he had an ERA north of 4. I think it was like 4.25 or so. So yeah, for whatever reason, they are better at getting to Skubal than most teams are at getting to him. My whole thing is, like, confidence, we, especially in baseball, cannot be overstated. It is a very real thing. You get out of rhythm, you get out of sync, you don't feel like you're, you know, and you kind of get into these modes. These games become important. I would shift, lineup would probably be my next shift. Maybe Mikel Garcia, you know, like, maybe Mikel needs some more time higher up as well. Like, he's still hitting in the lower part of the order behind some guys that he'd been hitting behind this entire time. Maybe that's the next shift. But, like, yeah, I think you got to shuffle some things. The guys at the bottom are going to be the guys at the bottom. The Waters, the Isbells. We know where they're hitting. It's really about where you're moving Massey, Salvi, Canna, and a few others.
Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll get back to the draft. One thing Cody and I disagree a little bit on how the draft has gone over the last couple of years for the Chiefs and what they need to find more often. That's coming up in 10 minutes or so. But over the weekend, the San Francisco Giants were, of course, involved in a series, and one of their pitchers, Logan Webb, was talking to the media like anybody would after a game.
After a pitch, sure.
Right. And look, we've all been in clubhouses before. You know, a variety of different things go on sometimes in a clubhouse, different conversations, different noises, I guess.
With Bumgarner, Gum, and Juan Marichal for at least four outings with... At least four outings with 10 strikeouts and no walks. What does it mean to you to be in that list with those guys?
I'm sorry, guys. That's, farts are always funny. I'm not going to lie.
Logan Webb, one of his teammates, presumably in the background, clearly farts, and he just can't, you know, he's a normal person.
He was trying to continue his presser. I will say, particularly funny sounding fart. Like, in his defense, you know.
It sounded a little bit dusty, you know, that's what it is. It sounded a little...
I mean, come on, man. He's talking to the media. You couldn't hold that one in?
Well, the clubhouse, it's their spot. It's their place, right?
This is their safe spot, you're saying?
I mean, Logan, if you watch the video, he's trying to hold it in, too. He's trying not to laugh.
With 10 strikeouts and no walks. What does it mean to you to be in that list with those guys?
I'm sorry, guys. That's, farts are always funny.
Oh, it's such an honest moment. Oh, man. Like, I don't know. I can't imagine, like, you're trying to have this serious conversation about your pitching performance.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just like, usually I would take that as like, that's a light thing. I actually agree with Webb though. Generally speaking,
it's funny.
Like, think about it. Like, even in really serious moments, it's funny. Oh, yeah. Because it's like, might be funnier in those, right? Because it's like everything seems so like buttoned up.
Well, if it's quiet too, like completely quiet, people are having a serious conversation and someone just rips one.
Yeah, I mean,
everybody starts looks around. Everybody's thinking the same thing, and so then you start laughing. Like,
it's funny.
Do we know if Logan Webb lost or did he?
He's having a good season. I looked up his numbers. He's actually he's got like an under three ERA. He's 2-1. He's actually having a nice year.
He's loose. He's feeling loose.
Even if he lost, then it's still a funny moment to lighten the room a little bit. You know.
He was coming off an effort in which he went 6 innings and only gave up one run at 12 strikeouts.
Oh, so, I mean, good move.
He absolutely dominated at his start. How close was he? That got picked up well on that microphone.
Four outings with 10 strikeouts and no walks. What does it mean to you to be in that list with those guys?
I'm sorry, guys. That's, farts are always funny. I'm not going to lie.
There you go. Logan Webb. Yeah, we need to find out which teammate. If we were in San Francisco, you need to find out what teammate that moment. Add to the story a little bit.
Oh, man. I wish that happened to the Royals. Be even funnier if it was like a player you knew. I mean, I know Logan Webb, just as in like knew personally, I guess would go with it. But yeah, funny. I can't argue any side of that. It's not my favorite baseball clubhouse moment in the last 5 years. That's the guy who looked like he was from, like, he was a founding father interviewing Jason Vargas. But very high up on the list. Any other clubhouse ones that stand out to you the last 2 years?
What was the backstory on that, by the way? The reporter?
Think some of it was just like the way the picture was framed made it look more than it was. He wasn't actually dressed like a founding father. It just very much.
Because I didn't know if they were in Boston or something. Like today, the Red Sox play at, like, here in, 10 minutes or something like that? Or are they already playing?
Was he wearing, like, one of those wigs? Is that what you're saying?
Dude, you're just going to have to look up the photo. Okay. I don't have a better way to describe it than.
Yeah, Boston's already playing right now. They played at 10 o'clock this morning. It's a Boston Marathon Day, I think, whatever.
What?
Hey, Boston Marathon Day.
That makes sense. I was like, why are they playing at 10 o'clock in the morning? Are they somewhere?
Every year they do that one.
Drew, other than he looks like he signed the original Declaration of the Independence, he's holding this like ancient recorder. It's just like a giant Marantz recorder. So like that does not help to the situation. It's just a great photo.
Up next, let's talk more about the draft. One thing you want to see more out of the Chiefs general manager, and the Royals do have one legit thing certainly going right now for them. We'll tell you what that is next.